This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It is college football playoff week, ladies and gentlemen. Four games we've all been waiting for this for quite some time, and we will get our first one on Friday. I debated whether or not to have him on again this week. I begrudgingly did so. My enemy for the week, Wes Reynolds, the pride of Indiana University. Mr. Reynolds, I saw a tweet from you at Wes Reynolds 1 that said the ticket has been secured. You will be inside of Notre Dame Stadium Friday evening.
Yeah, look, really looking forward to it. And I'm referring to it more as the state championship game, Tim. Yeah, state of Indiana, even though sometimes us IU people deride Notre Dame a little bit as USM, University of Southern Michigan, because they're in the Michiana region. And, you know, even though Notre Dame is in the state, they're a national school. So it doesn't feel like, you know, they're not a state school and they're a private institution. But yeah, I look at it, it's a state championship game. You know, before you can win a national one, you got to win the state.
There you go.
That's what we have on Friday night. So first time Indiana, I believe 1991 was the last time that they were there. So yeah, looking forward to it. The ticket allotment to Indiana ticket holders, season ticket holders, was like 3,500. But I think we're at least going to have several thousand in red, you know, maybe approaching close to 10,000. I know everything that we have, all the events we have leading up to it are sold out. So we are going to have a contingent, but surely outnumbered on Friday night. But very much looking forward to it. It's 2 days away. It's starting to become more and more real that Indiana football is one of 12 teams that get to play for a national championship this year.
Yeah, and I'm thrilled for you guys. I'm thrilled for your fan base. It's been a remarkable season. I know there's been plenty of fodder about, you know, who have they beat? Well, you could do that with everybody. I mean, you could do that with Texas. You could do that with Notre Dame. You could do that with Penn State to an extent. So I'm excited for you. I'm excited for your fan base. I'm excited for college football that this game is on Friday night. I'm excited for me personally because it worked out for my schedule, which right. We can get into a little bit later on. But yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be cold. I am going to have a meteorologist on the program tomorrow. My neighbor, Justin Bruce, who is a local meteorologist, he's going to break down the three cold weather games. Might even throw a little Montana State in there. By the way, VSiN employees are going to be chilly this weekend. Wes will be at Notre Dame, Indiana, and Stormy will be on the sidelines for Montana State and South Dakota. So there will be some cold VSiN employees, and I'll be on the Smurf Turf come Monday doing sidelines. Yeah. For the Potato Bowl.
Yeah, Montana State, really the outlier, the lone undefeated team in FCS, because you've got three of the Missouri Valleys, the Dakota schools, South Dakota State, North Dakota State's the first matchup, South Dakota at Montana State. So, you know, it's not Montana State, probably not used to being the favorite now to win the whole thing, but that's where they are.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So we got a lot to get to. I wanted to focus, and usually Wednesdays with Wes are pretty fast-paced, pretty quick, 25, 30 minutes, and maybe we'll keep it to that. But I wanted to focus a lot on Notre Dame, Indiana, because there's not a lot of people in this world that know more about those two institutions and those two football programs than the two of us. So right now, as we sit, you know, you were on last week and you wrote up for our guide over at VSiN.com, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, to take 7.5 with Indiana. And seems like you're on the right side there as we've seen the market move that way. The total's interesting to me. It actually went up today to 52. And, you know, looking at the betting splits, it doesn't necessarily fit this thought process. But everybody that works in the media that covers Notre Dame that I talk to about this game thinks this is a dead under game. But once again, the market would disagree. Market now up to 52. I'm curious your thoughts on the total. My initial inclination was to look under. I have not played a side or a total in this. I have a prop that I like, and I'll get into that here in just a moment. But what do you make of this total, especially if we could see a little precipitation? Not expected to be a blizzard, but you could see a little bit of snow on Friday night there in South Bend.
Yeah, and maybe the market is believing that we're going to get a snowbird here, because my initial inkling was the under as well, because, you know, probably heavy running you would certainly expect from Notre Dame, that they're going to test this Indiana defensive line, who's been, I think, terrific all year. And I think one of the few saving graces of that 38-15 loss at Ohio State, I thought the defensive line in the front seven in general, which is very transfer heavy, especially with Cignetti's guys from James Madison, a couple other group of five guys that have really just played well for this team. So you would have thought, okay, this is going to be more of a running based football game. But the fact that we could get some snowver factors here in South Bend on Friday night, we shall see. Indiana, by the way, has played in the snow, albeit it was against Purdue, the 66 nothing, the Route 66. But that is one thing for Indiana. They have played in these conditions. If it is a, you know, kind of windy and snowy up there in South Bend. So at least in the weather conditions, they should be certainly prepared for it.
You know, when I look at Indiana, and this isn't meant to be denigrating to the Hoosiers, because both teams are phenomenal in the turnover margin, Notre Dame plus 16, Indiana plus 15, and that certainly could be the difference in this game on Friday night. But it feels a little bit to me that Indiana is a bit Notre Dame light. And what I mean by that is very good quarterback, two very good running backs, not massive playmakers out wide. So what do you envision the game plan to be for Indiana offensively? Because, Wes, if you look back at the Ohio State game, that first drive was just a thing of beauty. And then after that is where they really struggled. I believe it was 6 yards over 33 snaps until their final drive. They were able to get into the end zone. But what's interesting, and I talked about this on a podcast last night with my buddies Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna, which was, if you look back to the NIU game, NIU was able to really get a decent amount of success and push up the middle. And that's what I think you could see from the two running backs, Ellison and Lawton there for Indiana. Howard Cross is back, but when you look at this offense, what do you expect Indiana's game plan to be against Notre Dame's defense?
I think it's probably going to be balanced. You would think that they want to establish the run at least a little bit, because if you watch that Ohio State game, even though Indiana, I thought, mixed the pass up really well on the first drive as a very good script, Indiana had problems protecting. And you know, the offensive line, I thought, really got overwhelmed by that Ohio State defensive line. Curtis Rourke just had no time. So, you know, the pass protection, not only up front, but with the running backs, are going to have to be better. So you'll see a mix, but I think that you'll see them at least try to establish the run early. But these passes, I think, are going to have to be quick for Indiana. You know, three-step drop and the ball out for Curtis Rourke. Even though he can run, he's not necessarily a runner like Riley Leonard is, where they have, like, design runs for him. And, you know, a certain package for him to run the football. So, you know, you're going to have to be able to get the passes out, I think, really in a hurry. Notre Dame can certainly get they can certainly get pressure on the passer. I think they're like 25th, what I was looking at in terms of sack percentage. So, you know, you got to be able to protect up front. So probably quick. We'll see what, you know, if they try to go a little bit of tempo. They kind of mixed that in a little bit on the first drive, but, you know, converted some third downs, and certainly that always gives you a little bit of confidence. But they run primarily two running backs, Tyson Lawton and Justice Ellison, who are both transfers in from this previous season. So they're going to go a two-back system. In terms of what you say out wide, they don't necessarily have the burners at receiver, but Elijah Serrano is a very reliable pass catcher. They also have Miles Price, who is a transfer from Texas Tech. A lot of their transfers are group of five guys and not power four guys, but with Price, they certainly have him. They use Keyshawn Williams, who's kind of like a slot guy, little short guy, that's their backup to try to move the chains a little bit. But I think Indiana, look, it's by committee. This is, there's not like a Jeremiah Love like Notre Dame has where it's like, okay, you got to stop him and he's going to be the key or he's going to put up big numbers on you. Indiana really doesn't have that, Tim. They have a lot of, I think, by committee guys. And this has been, you know, the ultimate, I think, team here with, you know, a wide variety of guys. Couple other receivers to watch too, Omar Cooper, Miles Cross as well. So, you know, there's not that one guy, but it's kind of just like a group that Notre Dame is going to have to focus on.
Yeah, and for Notre Dame in the secondary, you know, Xavier Watts is their safety. He won the Bednarik Award a year ago for the best defensive player in college football. He's been better this year, and multiple publications have him as a first-team All-American. I think he's the you know, what stirs the drink, the straw that stirs the drink back there. But I've mentioned this on a number of podcasts here. Notre Dame's best pro prospect is out. Benjamin Morrison dealt with a hip injury. He's done for the year. He is not coming back. They lost some good pieces off of the edge early on in the year in Jordan Botello, who looked like he was kind of rising up to have a big time season there, and then Boubacar Traore. So they don't really have, Notre Dame, a massive front on the edges. I do like their linebackers. True freshman Kinstan Viliamuasa will be out for this game, but I do like what they have. And Al Golden's done a masterful job utilizing pressure and bringing pressure. And Notre Dame has seen a pretty good step in from Leonard Moore, the freshman corner. But Christian Gray was the guy that was picked on quite a bit against USC. Mekhi Lemon had a heck of a day against the Irish in that regular season finale, 9 catches, 133 yards, Wes. So I'm just curious. That's my biggest thing about Indiana. I think they can have some success on the ground. I don't think this is a Notre Dame run defense, even though they completely wiped out Army and Navy. I do think they can be had a little bit. Howard Cross being coming back is big, but my biggest curiosity was, can they make them pay with young corners? And I think, and this is why I'm getting a little spooked by the total, so I probably will stay off, Wes, but I look at what Notre Dame has out wide, and I don't really know if Bo Collins, the transfer from Clemson, or Jordan Faison, or Jaden Harrison, or any of these wide receivers, in my opinion, they're not, as you said, for Indiana. Notre Dame doesn't have burners either, so they kind of scheme guys open. Indiana in the secondary, they run a lot of zone, right? More zone than man. Notre Dame almost exclusively runs man defense out there. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic to see those two defenses and how different they'll be played on Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at the Indiana defense as well, very transfer heavy. I believe, I think 9 of the starters are transfers. So these are, a lot of these are older guys. Mikhail Camaro has been getting some All-American accolades. He came from JMU. CJ West at nose. He was at Kent State. Aiden Fisher, Jalen Walker. These are JMU guys at linebacker. They got a young kid, D'Angelo Pons, who's only a sophomore, who has gotten some conference accolades and some honorable mention All-American accolades. So this is an older group on defense, even though a lot of these names are new if you followed the Indiana program, because a lot of these kids weren't here last year. But against the run is where I've been really impressed with them, and they're going to have to be good against the run, because one of the challenges that Indiana maybe has not faced yet this year is the fact that you have a running quarterback in Riley Leonard. Indiana's faced guys that have some mobility. Will Howard at Ohio State, Dylan Raiola at Nebraska, but those guys and the kid Aiden Childs up at Michigan State, but they haven't faced a guy that can really give you that kind of production in the running game like Riley Leonard can. So, you know, got to stay disciplined and in your gaps and not break contain. And they've done a really good job of not doing that this year.
Yeah, so that leads me to my play on this game. I think I alluded to it yesterday on the podcast, but I'll circle back to it here. Mitchell Evans is Notre Dame's tight end. And last year, Wes, he started to really emerge as the best pass catcher on the roster. And he had a big performance in the loss against Ohio State. And he followed that up by another really strong performance against Duke. And you know, there was belief at the time last year that he could leave and go to the NFL. Unfortunately for him, he tore his ACL against Pittsburgh. And this year, he just hasn't looked fully healthy, but we have started to see it these past couple of games. And right now at FanDuel, at BetMGM, 27.5 is his over-under for receiving yards, Wes. And I think with, as you mentioned, there's going to be a concerted effort, rightfully so, by Indiana. Hey, we cannot let Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, and Riley Leonard beat us with the legs. So my belief is there's going to be some quick throws, kind of settling in that zone. I think Mitchell Evans is a big component in this game. So I played his over 27.5 receiving yards. That's how I've attacked this game. I think especially if there's some snow, you're going to want to get some quick throws out. He's sure-handed. Notre Dame has had some issues with drops with Bo Collins and Jordan Faison as of late, even Jaden Greathouse in a couple of games. I think this is a guy you can rely on. I think he could have a big game. So I'll throw it to you. How has Indiana done defending tight ends this year?
Yeah, look, they'll give up a little bit of the middle because they give zone and they focus so much on getting penetration and just stopping the running game. So, you know, they got a couple good linebackers there. Jalen Walker's good in the middle. Aiden Fisher at will linebacker, pretty sure tackler back there. And then they have Linnell Carr, what they call the stud position, where sometimes he lines up as a down lineman, sometimes he's in coverage. But that, I think, is a good way to get Indiana. I think, you know, it's not necessarily just getting them on the perimeter. You got to be able to work the middle against these guys. So I actually think, to your point, Evans would be a good play for the over. And look, Notre Dame always has a good tight end. When do they not ever have a good tight end, Tim? So,
And I think, Wes, you're kind of, and I know, I, you know, we hate the word value because it's just thrown around all the time. But I think when you look at 27.5 for Mitchell Evans, it seems low. But then you look at his numbers this year, and he's only eclipsed 27.5 twice this season, but he just hasn't been fully healthy. He had 59 yards against USC, albeit one of them was on a fake punt. He had 34 yards against UVA, but I go back to last year when he was healthy, 61 against Tennessee State, 75 against Ohio State, 134 against Duke, 71 against Louisville, and had 66 against Pitt in the game he eventually tore his ACL. So I just think he's now fully healthy. He's got a connection with Riley Leonard. I think that is going to be, especially with, you know, almost 3 weeks to prepare, that's a guy you can certainly rely on. So let's before we take a wrap, you do have Indiana plus 7.5. You're going to be there. You're going to cheering on your beloved Hoosiers. Let's do a little why Indiana wins and why Notre Dame wins. So let's start with, for you, optimistic thought first. Why does Indiana win on Friday night?
Why Indiana wins, I'll start with the defense, and we kind of were leading into it, what you were talking about with the Evans prop. Riley Leonard against zone coverage drops about 10 points when you compare it to man, and this is cover three, essentially, that Indiana is running at the fourth highest rate in the country. So, you know, I think just kind of, you know, making them have long drives, you know, not giving up those gashing holes in the running game, which I don't think Indiana really, you know, Notre Dame is going to get theirs. I think Notre Dame is going to run well above what the average is that Indiana gives up. But I think Indiana, it's kind of strength on strength a little bit, and Indiana really swarms the ball. So, you know, keeping those big plays and those big Jeremiah Love and Riley Leonard runs to a minimum, you know, where a big run is 12 to 15 yards and it's not going for 40 or 50. So look, got to account for Leonard on every play. I think that they're going to be ready for that. And then, you know, I wonder with Indiana, the pass protection, I think, is going to be better. It certainly couldn't have been worse against Ohio State. And it wasn't all that great against Michigan, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think, you know, avoiding the blitz, you know, you would know better than I in terms of, you know, how frequently Notre Dame blitz. They're certainly a good pass rush. I think Notre Dame is maybe middle of the pack in terms of their blitz rate. So Indiana is going to have some time, I think, to make some throws down the field. I think Rourke can certainly do that. So, you know, just got to keep it a game. You don't want to get behind early and, you know, have that one mistake that happens where that's what happened in the second quarter at Ohio State with Indiana. I feel like they hadn't faced any adversity, and then the punter drops that snap. Ohio State scores the very next play. And Indiana didn't deal with the adversity the first time because they hadn't dealt with it all year. So I think they're going to be much more equipped to deal with that. You know, if you get a fumble in this weather, where they're going to be able to recover and they're not going to be kind of questioning psychologically where their heads are, because they're going to be at least used to the situation where Kurtz and Yannick be like, okay, fellas, we've been here before. So I think Indiana, I think, learned a lot. Because everybody's pointing out that game because they hadn't beaten anybody really of note. And the one elite team they played, you know, gave them a pretty good licking in Columbus. But I think that's a learning experience from Indiana. So I think they're going to be more prepared for adversity this time around.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame loses if they lose the turnover battle. And both of these teams, as I alluded to, plus 16 for Notre Dame, plus 15 for Indiana. It feels like it comes down to that. I think Notre Dame is more talented pound for pound, but you've got a veteran quarterback in Curtis Rourke. You've got a veteran coaching staff, obviously, in Kirk Cignetti. They're going to be able to put them in great positions. I think Notre Dame also, this is something I've brought up a little bit here lately, which is the kicking game is a nightmare. Mitch Jeter, who is a transfer from South Carolina, you think back to week one, Wes, he went 3 for 3 against Texas A&M, hit 240-plus yarders. That was so massive for the Irish in a game that was 6-6 early on in the game. And now you look at it, he hasn't made a field goal since November 9th. He hasn't made one north of 30 yards since September 28th. He's been banged up. Marcus Freeman's talked about it. So when you're talking about a playoff game and you know how tight the margins are, I think special teams is a concern. I think Notre Dame wins if they're just able to kind of do what they did in Texas A&M, which was eventually, Wes, kind of take the game over from a physicality standpoint and just be the more physical team. I like this offensive line. It's really gelled together well. I was impressed by the second half that they had from an offensive standpoint against USC. And I think with Leonard, Price, and Jeremiah Love, if he's fully healthy, he got dinged up against USC. I think Notre Dame can eventually kind of pull away in this one. But as for the total, my initial gut kind of told me it would be under. But once again, the market's kind of freaking me out here. So I'm going to stay off of that one. Before we wrap on this, any interest in the total in this one?
Yeah, not yet for me, you know, because I've kind of been going back and forth. And, you know, how are turnovers going to play? I think that that's a very big factor. And Indiana, I think, is going to have to win that battle to actually win this game. Not necessarily just to cover the 7.5, but they're going to have to force the turnover, which means you're going to have to, you know, force Leonard beyond the first read. If Riley Leonard can make these plays on first reads, Indiana's in trouble. You got to take something away and force him to have a second read and a third read. Then Indiana's going to have a chance, and then they're going to have a chance to force turnovers. But that's the ultimate, you know, arbiter, I think, here in terms of how this is going to play. Because if you get short fields, then all of a sudden that, you know, that's going to change a lot with the total. So nothing for me on that right now.
Will you have a money line ticket in pocket while you're sitting there in South Bend?
I sprinkle a little bit, Tim. I think I'm kind of like obligated to do it, to be honest with you. Where it's like, man, I'd feel like a real heel. It's like, oh, you don't really believe in what we're doing here at Indiana Football West, not having a money line ticket. So I will, you know, even though if you say, okay, who do you think is going to win? Well, I think Notre Dame's going to win the game, but I'm going to have a money line ticket for sure.
As you should, as you should. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through the other bowl games. We'll play. We'll talk all the way up to Christmas Eve, a tradition unlike any other, the Hawaii Bowl. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, more CFP games, more games before the CFP. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. By the way, the road to Jansanity. Make sure to head on over to VSiN.com. You have until Thursday afternoon to sign up. It's free. A chance to win over $5,000, or exactly $5,000, I believe is the purse. But Road to Jan Sanity, make sure you check that out, vsin.com. We've got a lot of great offers going on over there. If you want all of our picks, of course, become a VSIN Pro subscriber. We've got a holiday special going on right now for $79. Picking bowl games is pretty tricky, no doubt about it, when you look at how much things move. Let's quickly look at the Georgia Southern Sam Houston State game. Casey Keeler, the coach of Sam Houston State, the Bearcats with a K, he has moved on to Temple. However, not a lot of opt-outs for Sam Houston State. If I'm in a bowl pick'em pool, I might take a little Bearcats here plus the points, but that would be the only way I would look at it. Any more validation on this one?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way as well. And what you mentioned about bowls, just to what we've seen in the two games that we've had in bowl season right now, both of them have had big time middles in terms of where the number was. And, you know, West Virginia found their way inside that number. So you should have been able to get there on both sides. Same with the South Alabama Central Michigan game down there in Montgomery. But yeah, you're right. Casey Keeler. Leaving for Temple, so it is going to be Brad Cornelson, the offensive coordinator, who is going to be the interim. The defensive coordinator, also Skylar Cassidy, he is leaving for North Texas and taking a few assistants with him, but he apparently, they are going to stay for the bowl game. It maybe is a little bit reminiscent of James Madison last year, where a lot of the portal guys still played, but they have, you know, they're still looking and they're still arguably being contacted unless they have a no contact tag in the portal here. Everybody, you know, not a lot of opt-outs, as you mentioned. Jace Bauer, the backup quarterback in the portal for Sam Houston, but DuJour, also the defensive tackle, I believe he's going to play. So I think a lot of these kids are going to play, a lot of these starters that are going in the portal here. And, you know, I wonder if it's like James Madison, though, then they're going to get beat, because James Madison did get beat last year by Air Force. But Air Force really hard to prepare for in a short term time. So looking at this, Georgia Southern, third straight bowl under Clay Helton, but he has yet to win a bowl. Georgia Southern, by the way, has not won a bowl since 2020 in the New Orleans Bowl. So I lean a little bit Sam Houston. This is not something I played. They got a pretty darn good pass defense, actually. And look, have finished really strongly, did Sam Houston State. Remember, they were kind of snake bit last year, lost all the close games. This year they won all the close games. So market has come in a little bit on the Bearcats here. I think this was as high as 6, and now we're seeing some 4.5 out there. So if I do anything, I'm probably going to be on the Bearcats.
So we had interesting news, or official news, I guess would be a better way to put it, on Wednesday, and we are recording this on Wednesday, that Ohio is going to promote interim coach Brian Smith to head coach. And I think that's important, because Ohio loses their head coach, Tim Albin. He goes to Charlotte, but zero players hit the portal. Now, my assumption would be that maybe Tim Albin was like, hey, why don't you stick around, play the bowl game? This window will still be open. If you want to come down here, do that. But Ohio had not won the MAC since 1968. And I think they're excited to be in this bowl game. And now they know who their head coach is being. It's someone that they're familiar with. On the flip side, they're playing Jacksonville State, who, of course, Rich Rodriguez, he was sitting at the Frisco Bowl on Tuesday night with his West Virginia gear on. He's adios. They've got a bunch of starters there in the portal. So we've seen this number balloon up to about 4.5, 5. You know, you hate taking bad numbers, Wes, but either Ohio laying it or Ohio in a money line parlay, I think is the way to go. I think Ohio certainly has the motivational edge going into this game, now knowing that their head coach is someone that they know and is on their staff.
Yeah, look, I think Ohio probably the right side here, because remember, probably no school in FBS got hit more in the portal last year than Ohio. I remember riding up them up for the college football betting guide and wrote up the MAC this year, and they had close to 40 guys gone. And I was like, man, Ohio, I don't know about them. I don't know if they have the talent. Then what do? They go win the MAC. And now you play the Conference USA champion here in Jacksonville State. Looking at Jacksonville State, they have a dual threat option at quarterback with the kid Tyler Huff, 13 touchdown passes, about 2,200 yards passing. Also ran for 1,300 yards, 14 touchdowns with Trey Stewart, who ran for 23 touchdowns. So you look at the numbers, and Jacksonville State just put up stupid numbers in that Rich Rodriguez spread offense. But I do wonder, and those key guys, by the way, looks like they are going to play. Now, last year, players in the portal didn't play for Jacksonville State. So you're going to have kind of a hodgepodge, I think, of some guys that are going to be gone and some guys that are going to remain. Per reports, I think Huff and Stewart are going to play. But I think Ohio, you know, knowing what happened last year and knowing the accomplishment of winning that first MAC title since 1968, and there's still at least some continuity in the staff with Brian Smith now there, seemingly permanently, I should say. I think Ohio is the more motivated bunch here. And I still think that that's the trick in bowl games, even with all the portal stuff, you know, player portal and coaching portal, I must say. It's still who's more motivated to be there. And I think it could be the Bobcats here in the Cure Bowl on Friday afternoon.
All right, let's get to the Gasparilla Bowl, where we've got a Power 4 versus a G5. Normally, I like to back the G5 team here. And you mentioned Memphis and West Virginia, depending on what number you got. Also, in-game betting, very, very advantageous. Last night, I was able to grab West Virginia plus 12.5 in game. Just watching that game, Memphis couldn't stop a nosebleed late in that one. What a crazy finish, by the way. In that game, a lot of dumb decisions, but regardless, Memphis gets the win by 5. Tulane's an interesting case here. So their starting quarterback, Darian Mensah, has already committed to Duke. He's gone. One of their edge rushers is gone. Both of their backup quarterbacks, Ty Thompson and Kai Horton, are in the portal, but Ty Thompson is going to play this game. And I think a lot of people were expecting, especially early on, Wes, if you were betting these games kind of at open, that you were going to get Florida at a cheap rate because John Summerall, the coach of Tulane, was going to leave. He was going to go to North Carolina, or he was going to go somewhere. Well, he's not going anywhere. He's staying. So I don't know where Tulane's mind's at. They lost their last two games. They lost to Memphis. They lost to Army in the AAC championship game. And Florida, you know, I joked and I said this to Burke on Tuesday, you know, Florida, Sunbelt Billy did an amazing job this year, man. Give that dude some credit. Everyone wanted him fired. They get to a bowl game. I know Florida State was a dumpster fire, but still, to get to 6-6. So this touch 14, at 14, I would have had interest probably in the green wave. Now it's in that no man's land of 12.5, 13. I still kind of like the dog here, but I don't know if I would necessarily want to get involved in this spot, even though for a G5 program to have Ty Thompson as your backup quarterback, you could certainly do a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the reasons I did grab the 14. It would still be a modest play on Tulane. The number obviously went up on the Gators and that was when John Summerall was kind of maybe slightly being courted from some other jobs. I know he was attached a little bit to North Carolina. I think he's waiting around for an SEC job personally. So, you know, I know he signed a contract extension, but I felt like just the number got a little bit too high on Florida. And I understand because Florida played very well at the end of the year. And now it feels like that program at least has some momentum for the first time in a few years. DJ Lagway, you know, 5-1 as the starter, not a lot of kids going in the portal yet necessarily for the Gators. So there does appear to be some momentum, but you know, you do kind of got to look at the end of the season, putting the old Miss victory in the upset aside. Florida State, not much to take from that. Florida State is way down this year, but I just thought that the number got a little bit too high at 14 with Tulane, because I do think the kids at Tulane are going to be motivated to play a group of five school. Look, they certainly showed it against USC, against Caleb Williams. Granted, that was, you know, one of the New Year's Six, the formerly known as New Year's Six bowl games, that they're certain to be motivated. I think they'll be motivated too for the Gators here, even though this is in nearby, it's in St. Pete. So, you know, Florida is going to have the travel edge because it's pretty much a local game for them, but I thought the number was just a little bit high and maybe the market got a little bit carried away. So I'm going to ride the wave plus 14 here.
All right, let's get back to the college football playoff. We spent the first segment, of course, ad nauseum talking about Indiana, Notre Dame, SMU, Penn State, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State. I'll give you a couple bets, and I don't like the way – actually, I do like the way the market is moving here. Tennessee, Ohio State, we've seen under money hit the market. I took 47 on the under, so I do like that we've seen movement there. I actually lean a little bit towards the favorite. Want to see if all those hooks disappear. I'm diving into it a little bit more, but I think I might end up on Clemson plus the points. Anything that's jumping out to you in the three Saturday playoff games?
Yeah, I'll start with the first one in State College. If I'm on anything, I think I'm going to end up being on Penn State here, Tim. Number really hadn't moved because I think a lot of the market is probably lukewarm on backing James Franklin in a big time game, and rightfully so. They lose another one in the Big Ten title game against Oregon. But I think that this defense for Penn State, they're eighth in scoring defense, they're sixth in yards allowed per game. And I just wonder if they're going to be a little bit physical, if the physicality of Penn State is going to beat the speed of Clemson that Rhett Lashley and his guys certainly have. I think that this is a big time step up for SMU. Look, they competed and almost got Clemson at the end, but much was made of SMU's schedule. Like, who did they beat? And, you know, don't really have any huge wins of note either. So I think that this is probably going to be too big of a step up in class. I could see Penn State by like maybe 10 to 14 here. So I don't think the number is too far off. In terms of the middle game, I am actually leaning a little bit more toward the favorite in Texas. Texas is who I picked in our Beeson College Football championship guide to go ahead and win the national title. This number is up to 12. There are still a couple 11.5s out there, but I just wonder, Tim, how Clemson's going to be able to run the ball. They couldn't run the ball on SMU at all in the ACC title game against Charlotte. And if you can't run against them, how are you going to do it against arguably maybe the best defense in the country, certainly one of the top two or three? So I just worry about Clemson getting a little bit behind the chains. And I don't know if they have they don't have those old playmakers that they used to have at the receiver position several years ago. You know, that's why Dabo maybe is starting to experiment with the portal, I think, going in to next season. But I just think Texas, and I know Texas offensively can be a little bit shaky. What do they have? 17 against Arkansas, and, you know, just didn't score a lot of points in some of these games. Didn't score a ton against Kentucky either, but those are really good defenses. So I'm leaning to laying it with the Longhorns here. I'm with you on Tennessee, Ohio State. I'd like to see 7. Because I feel like the dogs been getting a little bit more of support here, because much has been made about how many, you know, volunteer fans, and they travel well, are going to be in Columbus. I think maybe that's a little bit overhyped. And I feel like this feels like a spot where Ryan Day is going to beat somebody. And he's maybe going to beat him somewhat convincingly, you know, to kind of get the posse off the back, shall we say, there in Columbus. Total has gone down to 46.5. I think that's going the right way.
Yeah. So it took 47. Talked about that yesterday on the podcast. That's an official play. And I think I'm going to probably lay 7 with Ohio State. 74% of bets right now at DraftKings on Tennessee, as Chris Felica would say, maybe a dog with fleas situation.
Could
all right,
be.
Three other bowl games after this weekend. One game I'll be at. I will be on the Smurf Turf there. I will be on the broadcast team for Bowl Season Radio. Looking forward to my return to Boise. I was there a couple of years ago. You got NIU and Fresno State. Both of their starting quarterbacks, Ethan Hampton for NIU and Mikey Keene for Fresno State, will not be playing in this game. We also have Coastal Carolina and UTSA on the teal turf. So it is a colorful turf day, Wes, on Monday. Myrtle Beach Bowl and the Potato Bowl. UTSA laying 9 and Fresno State catching 2.5, 3.
Yeah, I'll go to the Potato Bowl first. That's the second game, I believe, on Monday. Yep. Before we get to Myrtle Beach. I wonder how this is going to work for Fresno State, because remember, Tim Skipper was the interim coach, but he's not getting the gig. Matt Entz is. Yep. So, you know, you wonder, because you got to think, okay, we've got a guy on staff, and I don't know any insider stuff there at Fresno State, but there probably are some guys that wanted to see Skipper get the job. And he didn't. So you wonder a little bit about the attitude here, I think, of Fresno State to be there in Boise. Meanwhile, Northern Illinois, are they going to be like, hey, did we already win our bowl game, you know, beat Notre Dame? Because that's what they're going to be remembered for.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to be remembered.
I will definitely be talking about that on the broadcast. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to be remembered as much, for winning a bowl game trophy necessarily? So. The total here, very low for a bowl game. 40 is what I'm seeing at most of the stores out there. So, yeah, I don't know. I think if I were to play anything on a total, I would go under. I know that's ridiculous in a bowl game, considering we always seem to get shootouts here. But I've seen, I watched Northern Illinois a decent amount this year, and they had some very low scoring games. In MAC play, lost 20-9 at Miami of Ohio, lost 13-6 at home to Toledo, won 17-7 at Bowling Green. So they can have some grinders here. Would lean under, have not bet this game though as of yet.
All right, Christmas Eve is where we'll stop, and that is the Hawaii Bowl. Thankfully, it is back on Christmas Eve. It is where it should be. I by itself, Christmas Eve time, and throw it on there. And then watch Die Hard after it. San Jose State laying 3. Total, we'll call it 60.5 here in this one. Big news, and the market, I believe, knew it was coming. Nick Nash, the best wide receiver in college football. I said it. Best wide receiver in college football. Should have won the Biletnikoff.
Yeah, tell those voters that did not give it to him.
Unbelievable. The guy was it was incredible. But he will not be playing. He is out for this game. You know, rightfully so. He's preparing for the NFL. Not really a ton of opt-outs to note as of now. There is obviously the familiarity. Ken Niumatalolo being from Hawaii. Craig Stutzman, his OC, being from Hawaii. JVT likes to joke about last year when everybody in the world was saying, oh, Chevin Cordero, he's finishing up his career at San Jose State at Hawaii. They're going to win this game. And they got blown out by Coastal Carolina, if I remember correctly. So, 3-point favorites are the Spartans here against USF. I know Matt Newman's, I believe, has laid it with San Jose State. I would probably look that way a little bit too, maybe a short money line price, whatever that is. But any interest in the dog here in South Florida? Quite the travel for them all the way out to the islands.
Yeah, and look, they've had some adversity too here this year, losing their quarterback Brown after week 5. And, you know, I thought that they got off to a pretty solid start for the season, and then kind of, you know, traded wins, if you will, like trading money as a bettor, even though they did go 4-2 down the stretch. I would lean a little bit San Jose State here as well. Now, Sean Atkins from South Florida, I don't think he's in the portal yet. I'm checking my list here actually as we speak, but I think a tough call here. But San Jose State, is an explosive offense because they run a little bit of that modified run and shoot that Stutzman obviously learned under Juden Jones when he was a player and assistant.
Spread and shred is what they're calling
spread
it.
And shred. Absolutely. So they've upgraded it from the 90s terminology, but maybe would lean a little bit over here on Christmas Eve, 60.5. There is a couple 61s out there. Not sure if I had to do a side, it would be San Jose, but nothing yet. You know, with a lot of these games, Tim, I will say this, and I can apply it from last night. A lot of these games, I am waiting till game day or the day before, you know, does a line get out of whack, or maybe like West Virginia got a little bit out of whack getting up to a 6-point underdog. I ended up only being on 5.5, got probably pretty fortunate to be within the number, but that's what I think you're going to have to do here. Either bet it early or bet it late. You don't want to kind of be in the middle and get stuck on bad numbers necessarily. So that's kind of advice, I think, at least going on through the bowl season. One point I will make on the Monday Bowl for the Myrtle Beach Bowl, that's Coastal Carolina and UTSA. Only freshman quarterbacks remain on this Coastal Carolina roster because Noah Kim and Ethan Vasco are in the portal. So a redshirt freshman with no snaps, I think it's going to be Tad Hudson. He might be the starter for this game. So Coastal Carolina, a lot more attrition, I think, really, than UTSA here. So I understand why the market is certainly going to the Roadrunners, who, you know, nice finale for them. They did cover against Army and were pretty effective. But, you know, number, I think maybe if the number goes to 10, it's at 9.5 right now. Maybe out of principle, you go to the other side, similar to like that West Virginia deal last night. But yeah, you got to wait, I think, as close to game time, especially for these bowl games. Like the playoff, we kind of know what we're going to get. We know where these teams are. Not many opt-outs, not many portals or anything like that. But with a lot of these, you know, the more minor bowls, you're going to have to wait, I think, until the very end here to get the best value.
Well, Wes, I wish you safe travels. I wish you a enjoyable experience at Notre Dame Stadium, and hopefully for my sake, let's just call it a 3-point Notre Dame win. Tim, I'll let you cover.
Tim, I thought you were going Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You there, but I wish you joy and happiness, but I don't wish you a victory.
I do not.
Yeah, I wish you a cover so you're not too sad on the air on Sunday for Live Bet Sunday, where you and I do a few of those shows with Jeff Schwartz during the NFL schedule. But I shall return either a defeated man or a jubilant man that is going to be looking for travel accommodations to New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl.
There's no doubt. At Wes Reynolds, one is where you can find him. I'm at one, Tim Murray. Can't wait for these playoffs. One more pod this week as we'll talk to Matt Eumanns on Thursday to continue to get you ready for these epic first round showdowns. For Wes, I'm Tim. Thanks to Ryan, as always, behind the scenes, putting this all together. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.